watched Gina ride, and she knew that she'd been accurately pegged. Meg liked confident, competent women who didn't mind getting their jeans a little dirty, changing their own tires, or saddling their own horses. And she liked a woman who took time to appreciate stars, a fireside gathering, and a morning horseback ride. And she had a feeling that Gina appreciated that too. Did she maybe appreciate those things about Meg? Or was she just one of those types of people who said things to get a reaction, and who didn't really mean anything by the comments they made or the way they said them? She'd dated a woman like that a few years back, and it bugged her, though the sex had been good. She probably should have just stopped that relationship at the sex and not tried to make something out of it that it wasn't. Better stop thinking about sex right now. She eased Rusty forward to check on the others, 8 total, then dropped to the back where she could keep an eye on slower riders. Gina had ridden ahead and was chatting with Mark again, probably gathering more information for the story. The trail took them up into aspen, leaves rustling in the breeze, their light undersides flashing and dancing in the sunlight. Underbrush clogged the forest floor, and the horses picked their way carefully over the trail, single file.
"Hey, hold up, folks,"
Mark called from the front of the column, slowing his horse in a stand of aspen. Meg looked up, and the other riders watched him, expectant.
"I have an announcement to make. Tomorrow is our very own Meg's birthday."
Oh, shit. Meg smiled, embarrassed, as claps and whistles greeted this news.
"So, if any of you would like to ring in Meg's new year in style, we'll be taking her dancing and carousing in Saratoga tomorrow night after supper. Just meet up at the motel and we'll designate some drivers. Spread the word. We'll be going to the River Rest. Can't miss it. Saratoga's not that big, but ask if you'd like directions."
"How old are you now?" asked Jerry.
16, but don't tell anyone at the bar,"
Mark answered for her. Meg groaned good-naturedly. "Thanks, everyone. I appreciate it." To Jerry, she said, "I'll be 25.
"Oh, that was a good year for me," he said. "Hope yours starts out the way you want."
She caught Gina's gaze.
"Me too."
She jerked her attention back to him and smiled.
"And now back to our regularly scheduled ride."
Mark wheeled his horse back to the lead. Gina left the line and brought Daisy in next to Meg.
"I'll see you there," she said. "Save some party for me."
She grinned and went back to her place in the column, leaving Meg both aching and dreading tomorrow night. Aching because she'd see Gina, but dreading because that would definitely mark the end of her stay. Unless she was planning to extend a night. She might want to check on that, she thought, as she settled into the rhythm of hooves thudding against the hard-packed earth of the trail and the peppery smell of aspen bark that trailed after them. 7. Meg checked the guest register later that afternoon, but Gina hadn't extended a night. She was still slated to check out tomorrow. Maybe she'd stay in town then, if she really did plan to show up at the River Rest.
"Hi, hon,"
Stan said as he entered. She hurriedly clicked out of the register. "Just wanting to see how many we've got coming in."
"Not quite a full house, but we might get some latecomers for the weekend."
He placed a stack of mail on his desk.
"I need you to make a run to Laramie and then the feed store tomorrow morning. We've got enough folks to get guests settled, but you're off tomorrow after dinner and Saturday, birthday celebration and all."
He gave her a wink.
"Be safe."
"Yes, Dad," she said in her best imitation of a teenager. She got up from the chair.
Are you going to come?
For a little bit. I'm kinda old these days. Need my beauty rest.
She punched him lightly on the arm. Poor Dutchy. He smiled and handed her a couple of envelopes.
Could you take these to Alice?
Yep, and thanks for Saturday. He nodded.
You work hard, hon. You always have.
He paused, like he was trying to figure out what to say next.
You're the best damn daughter a man could hope to have.
She stared at him.
And I'm real proud of you. How well you do at school, how much you help around here. Hell, there are days I don't know how I get through without you.
Dad? Everything okay? She asked, half joking.
Just some stuff on my mind I wanted to tell you.
Okay, thanks. She gave him a hug, thinking that things seemed comfortable again between them, like before she'd told him she was gay. See you at dinner. She stepped toward the door.
Oh, and Gina tells me she's had a hell of a good time the past week. Said this is the most fun she's had on a story.
Told you it would be all right.
Thanks, darling daughter, for putting an old man's fears to rest,
he said plaintively.
She rolled her eyes.
Later, Dutchy. I've got mail to deliver. She waved the envelopes and left, the weight in one part of her world alleviated. Dinner and the fire were disappointing, though, because Gina didn't stick around. She probably had to finish up the story, and Meg chided herself for once again allowing a crush to override common sense. Gina was a reporter there to do a job. She was friendly and professional, and maybe what Meg thought was flirting wasn't. After all, Gina had to have boundaries when she worked, just like most people, and maybe she was reading way too much into some of Gina's comments, which sucked, but she really didn't have anything to go on, just her own stupid crush, or attraction, whatever the hell it was. Somehow she wasn't looking forward to tomorrow, which came too quickly. She was out of bed early and on her way to Laramie before things got really busy at the ranch. Alice had stalked her with a travel mug of coffee and a couple of cinnamon rolls, but she hated missing breakfast and maybe seeing Gina. Jesus, it was like she had a virus or something. Or worse, an addiction. And she hadn't gotten her number yet. For networking, like Alice said. After lunch, she'd get it then, for sure. But when she parked the truck next to the office after she'd returned and unloaded it, she realized that Gina's Pathfinder was gone. She strode into the office, ribcage closing in on her heart like walls collapsing over a foundation. She clicked the mouse at the computer on the desk and stared at the screen. Checked out at 8 that morning. She exited the window and stared at the screen for a few minutes before she left, teeth clenched together. And it wouldn't have mattered had she taken one of the ranch's cell phones with her on her errands, because Gina didn't have the numbers for them. And like a dumbass, she didn't have Gina's number. Not that it mattered. No guarantee she could have gotten through out here. She saw Davy in the parking lot on his way to the dining hall. Hey, she said. He waited. Do you know when Gina left? She hated asking him, but she sure as hell didn't want to ask her dad, who might pick up on her mood about it, and she definitely didn't want to ask Alice, because she already knew too much.
Around 8? Guess she got a call from her boss early this morning, and they needed her to do something, so she had to leave early.
He shrugged, but he sounded almost happy about it. Did she say anything else?
Like what?
Like whether she was planning to follow up on the story here. Or if she was planning on going to the River Rest that night. But Meg didn't voice that part.
Not really, just said she had to leave.
She nodded slowly. He gave her a smug look and continued toward the hall. She refrained from calling him an asshole.
Hi, hun. Everything go okay?
She turned toward Stan. Yeah, unloaded, receipts on the desk.
Good, thanks. And your mom called this morning.
She swallowed her groan.
She wants to wish you a happy birthday.
Okay, I'll give her a call. She went back to the office, not wanting to get into a discussion about Gina with him. After all, to him, she was just a reporter who came out to do a job. Dealing with her mom right now seemed to fit her mood. She half listened to Irene talk about her latest social event, thanked her for calling to wish her a happy birthday, and she'd let her know when she got the package from Kentucky. Knowing her mom, it was another girly blouse that she'd never wear. Good thing they usually fit Janice or Anna. The conversation ended and Meg hung up, grateful that at least this time her mom didn't ask her if she'd met any nice young men. She sighed, frustrated and more than a little hurt that Gina had just up and left after she'd made a show yesterday of telling her she'd see her at her birthday gathering. She sat brooding, staring at the wall.
Hey, hon, Stan said as he came in. Can you make some calls for me today?
Sure, she managed a weak smile.
Just the usual courtesy stuff for guests coming in next week. Here's the list.
He handed a piece of paper to her.
Oh,
he started, but Troy stuck his head in.
Hey, Stan. Alice needs your okay on a few things as soon as you can. It's about dinner.
Okay.
He looked over his shoulder at Meg as he left and gave her a grin as he followed Troy. She sighed again and looked at the list. It'd take a while to get through it. She reached for the phone and decided to ignore the blinking number one on the answering machine. She'd check it later if she remembered. After she finished the phone calls, she went to help Mark and a couple other hands get the horses squared away for the evening upon their return from an afternoon trail ride. By dinner, she was almost resigned to Gina's absence, though it stung, which pissed her off. It was her own fault, after all, for thinking there was something beyond just chatting in their interactions. It was her own fault for hoping. Who the hell cared, anyway? It was a fun crush while it lasted, and now it was time to let it go. There'd be plenty more of those in the future. But it still hurt, and she still couldn't stop thinking about her. Screw it, she decided. This is why they call them crushes, after all, because they do hurt. And here it was, her birthday. Well, she'd enjoy it. Alice's awesome cake, and then a couple of beers in town would take some of the sting out of the day. She went to the dining room, determined to enjoy herself. Meg finished her first beer, and before she could even throw the bottle away, Tim handed her a fresh one.
Happy birthday,
he yelled as Laura dragged him to the dance floor. She raised the bottle at him and grinned. The growing crowd at River Rest jostled her senses, along with the smells of cigarette smoke and greasy Mexican food. She smiled. Who knew a couple from Chicago enjoyed two-stepping? She danced the next one with Mark, one with Floyd, and then two more with Jackson. Her friends at school joked with her that she was bi-danceual. Meg could lead or follow, depending on the partner. As the last notes sounded on the Tim McGraw song, she thanked Jackson and headed for the tables the Diamond Rock crowd had co-opted. She liked dancing, especially leading, though the non-ranch people at the bar probably wouldn't appreciate that. For the 100th time, she wondered what it would feel like to work Gina around the floor. And for the 100th time, she shut the thought down. She plopped down into an empty chair. Davy sat nearby, chatting up a local woman. He had so many asshole points on him at the moment that she debated telling the local that rumor had it that he had a girlfriend stashed in Laramie. Then again, the local might not care. She took another sip of her beer, which was on its way to warm. She wasn't much of a drinker, but she might consider another beer. She'd driven, but she could always get a ride home with someone else. Besides, her dad had already gone home, and she wouldn't feel embarrassed if she got a little buzz on, or more. And it might help kick the crush out of her heart. A hangover would serve as a diversion. The Randy Travis song playing over the dance floor faded to an end, and someone announced that it was karaoke time. The crowd cheered, and she decided another beer was definitely in order. She made her way to the bar, easing between two cowboys to lean on the polished wood. The bartender smiled, his bushy mustache moving with the motion of his lip, and reached into the ice-filled sink. He extracted a Bud Light, popped the top, and handed it to her. She pulled her wallet out of her pocket, and he shook his head.
"This one's on the house, Meg. Happy birthday."
"Thanks," she said, surprised. She tipped him a couple of dollars and turned to watch the stage, where a drunk cowboy slurred through a Hank Williams song. The audience whooped and hollered as he finished, and someone helped him down. 5 people later, the singing was worse, but people continued to clap and cheer even more enthusiastically. Meg felt a hand on her arm, and she turned her head.
"Hey, birthday girl,"
Gina said with a smile. Meg stared, and even if she knew what she wanted to say, she wouldn't have been able to. Gina leaned in closer so she could hear her over the crowd.
"Having fun yet?"
She smelled sort of spicy and crisp, like cinnamon, and Meg fought an urge to back her against the bar and kiss her, or hug her, or something.
"Hell yes,"
she finally said as Gina let go of her arm.
"I thought you'd left."
She looked at her, puzzled.
"What do you mean?"
"Didn't you get a call from your boss?"
Gina leaned closer again.
"Yes, she wanted the story by 1 instead of 5. So I had to get to Laramie and track down one last source before I emailed it. I faxed it, too, so she'd have copies in both formats. Got some photos developed and had them scanned and emailed. Then I had to make a few calls. Cell phone service is better in Laramie."
She studied Meg's face. "I told your dad and Alice I'd see you later today. I called and left a message, too." Meg remembered the answering machine, but she hadn't remembered to check the message.
"They didn't mention it,"
she said, and she wanted to laugh, relief cascading down her spine and through her chest.
"They probably thought I already knew. Davy just said you'd checked out and left."
She raised an eyebrow and a "why did you even bother" expression crossed her features. Meg laughed.
"Yeah, I guess that was stupid, asking him anything.
You'd have better luck getting answers on a snipe hunt.
And it'd be more fun.
Depending on the company, yes. And I told you, birthdays are a big deal in my world,"
she said with a smile.
"Well, thanks."
"Don't thank me yet. The night is young. You okay on that beer?"
She touched the bottle, assessing.
"Yep."
And she was okay in several other ways as well. More than okay. Even though this was Gina's last night here, she'd shown up like she said she would, and it provided a perfect context for Meg to get her phone number. Even if nothing came of it, she'd come to the party.
"All right, let me see if this fine gentleman at the bar can hook me up with something."
She raised her eyebrow again and brushed past her, making contact, though she had plenty of room. Meg gripped her bottle tighter as she watched her lean in to talk to the bartender. She took a drink from her bottle and let her gaze wander from Gina's boots up her jeans to her ass, which filled the faded denim perfectly, and her white button-down shirt, sleeves rolled to the elbows, set off her skin nicely. She took another drink, trying to quell the impure thoughts racing through her mind, like reaching out and brushing Gina's dark hair away from the collar of her shirt so she could kiss the back of her neck. She was clearly no longer interested in getting rid of this crush, or attraction, whatever the hell it was. Gina turned from the bar after adding some bills to the plastic pitcher that served as a tip jar. She held a short tumbler in her left hand. A slice of lime hung on the rim, and amber liquid filled a quarter of it. Tequila. Meg even found that sexy.
Tough day, huh?
She motioned at the glass. The right side of Gina's mouth quirked into a half smile.
Until now. Where are you sitting?
Over there. She led her toward the tables, and Gina followed, but when they got there, she didn't sit down.
I'll be right back.
She didn't set her drink down.
Don't run off,
she said with one of her mysterious little grins.
Okay.
Like that was even an option, the way Gina made her feel.
Good.
She regarded her for a long moment before she turned and pushed into the crowd. Meg watched her go, trying to ignore the pounding of her heart and the matching throb between her legs. She remained standing so she could watch a woman on stage who was singing a reasonably good rendition of a Winona tune. The crowd continued to cheer, and the announcer called for another round of applause. He then prepared the audience for the next singer.
And now, folks, show some Wyoming hospitality and make an out-of-towner feel welcome.
He turned and gestured at the next singer, who toasted the crowd with her glass of tequila. Oh my God, Meg said under her breath, as Gina took the lime wedge off her glass and bit it before she downed the tequila in one smooth swallow. The crowd roared its approval as she set the glass with the lime rind in it on the edge of the stage and turned to take the mic from the announcer.
Damn, a man said next to Meg. Who's that?
She didn't answer, and nobody else did either, because they were all waiting to hear what the out-of-towner was going to sing.
Thanks for the welcome, Gina said. I've got to tell you, I've been to a lot of places, but this is by far my favorite.
The crowd cheered.
Sorry to say I'm not in town much longer.
The crowd groaned.
But I hope I'll be coming back.
The audience stamped and cheered.
Enough about me. As some of you might know,
she paused for dramatic effect. We've got a birthday girl with us tonight. The crowd quieted a bit, waiting for her to continue. Meg felt all the blood drain from her face.
A few of you might know her, and if you don't, you should.
Gina paused again, gaze sweeping the crowd until it found her.
Meg Talmadge, happy birthday. This one's for you.
The crowd exploded with cheers, and Meg was suddenly surrounded, people laughing and clapping her on the back. The music started, and Meg recognized the tune immediately. One of her favorites, the Dixie Chicks, There's Your Trouble. Somebody took the half-empty bottle out of her hand and replaced it with a fresh beer. She gripped it automatically, staring at Gina, who was waiting for her cue. It came, and she launched into the song. Meg's jaw dropped, and the crowd quieted as Gina belted the lyrics in a low-down, bluesy voice that could undress you from the next room. Hell, from the next building.
Damn.
The guy next to Meg said again. Meg stared, her boots rooted to the floor like they had nails through the toes. This was far worse than a crush, and far worse than an attraction. Gina hit the chorus, and her eyes drilled into Meg's, even from the stage, as she sang that she shouldn't keep holding on, not to the wrong one.
There's your trouble.
She growled as she smiled playfully around the words and reached a hand out to Meg, as if entreating her to go ahead and give her a whirl, that the right one was right here. Meg clutched the bottle, oblivious to the crowd, caught in Gina's eyes, wondering if anyone had ever had an orgasm without being touched. As Gina kept singing, she figured she'd probably find out. She finished another verse and hit the chorus again, directed it again at Meg. The crowd started singing along with her, raising their drinks in the air and stomping in time to the beat, putting extra emphasis on "There's Your Trouble." The song ended and the crowd broke into cheers that shook the tin roof. Gina waited a few moments, then started singing "Happy Birthday" a cappella, smiling at Meg as she did. The crowd joined in immediately and raised drinks first to Meg, then to Gina, cheering and whooping. Gina's performance brought down the house and put an end to the karaoke. A Shania Twain song blared from the speakers and dancers filled the small floor. Still stunned, Meg automatically took a sip from the fresh beer. Jackson hugged her around the neck with one arm.
"City Slicker sure can rip 'em," he said appreciatively. "Happy birthday, gal."
"Thanks." She glanced around the crowd looking for Gina, but didn't see her. She turned and bumped into Davy, who glared down at her.
"So that's how it is," he said, beer and disgust on his breath. "I thought so."
"What are you talking about?"
"I figured she was a damn."
"Don't say it," she warned. "Don't even fucking think it. Because whatever you say about her, you're saying the same thing about me." His eyes narrowed. "Yeah, that's right," she snapped. "So think long and hard before you run your mouth." His jaw muscles clenched, and she tightened her grip on her bottle. "Prick."
"Problem?"
came Jackson's voice behind her.
"Not with me, personally," she said.
He shifted his gaze to Davy and waited for him to say something. He didn't. Instead, he shot Meg another glare before he turned his back on her and pushed through the crowd.
"Anything I should know?" Jackson asked her.
"Just that he's a shit." He put his hand on her shoulder and smiled down at her.
"Got that figured out already. Should I worry about anything else?"
She thought about Davy lurking in the parking lot, waiting for her or Gina.
"Let's hope not."
He released her shoulder.
"Floyd's been keeping an eye on him."
He gave her an innocent little shrug.
"And he's done putting up with his bullshit."
Relief flooded her chest. "Thanks."
"Hey, it's your birthday, gal. Go have some fun and don't think about him. We've got you covered."
She relaxed and gave him a smile. She felt better already. He moved away just as another group of people came by with birthday wishes. She didn't recognize half, but she thanked them, shook hands, and returned friendly half hugs. After a few more minutes in the crowd, she suddenly felt claustrophobic and overheated, so she made her way to the patio, where she hoped the night air would clear her head. A few people occupied a table in the far corner, talking. They ignored her. Muted light from the bar spilled from the open door, and a solitary street light in the corner of the Dirk parking lot provided contrasting shadows. She walked to the railing and gripped the smooth, cold metal with one hand, Gina's voice still echoing in her head.
"Happy birthday."
Meg turned. Gina watched her, another glass of tequila in her hand. She seemed a little uncertain.
"Jackson said you came out here."
Meg started. She shrugged helplessly and instead touched her beer bottle to Gina's glass. Gina visibly relaxed.
"I was afraid you'd freak out."
She shook her head in an "I can't believe this" motion. "That was, damn, where do you learn to sing like that?" She shrugged and leaned in a little.
"I was inspired," she said, her voice low.
"No one's ever..."
"Damn,"
Gina watched her, swirling the tequila in the glass with the slow motion of her hand. "Tell me something." She waited, and the expression in Gina's eyes made her bones melt. "What does a girl have to do to get you to make a play for her?" Meg's stomach dropped into her boot heels. "Ask." A smile reminiscent of a long, languid afternoon broke across Gina's lips.
"So all I really had to do..."
"I didn't say it would work," she said drolly, trying to control the pounding of her heart.
"Though the song was a nice touch."
Gina looked down at her glass, then back at her.
"So let's just say, hypothetically, of course," she was still smiling,
"that every time I look at you and every time I think about you, it takes my breath away."
"Hypothetically?"
This had to be some kind of dream.
"Hypothetically."
Gina squeezed the wedge of lime into her tequila. She kept her eyes on Meg's. She nodded, affecting a thoughtful air.
"I'd say you should definitely ask."
Gina dropped the lime into the glass.
"So, how about it? Are we still talking hypothetically?"
She raised her eyebrows and grinned playfully. She was amazed at how steady her voice sounded. The expression in Gina's eyes sent her blood galloping between her thighs, a stampede of longing.
"No,"
Gina said with a smile that could have melted a glacier.
"We're not."
She leaned in close to her, and her breath was warm on her face.
"Make a play for me, cowgirl,"
she said softly, and Meg felt Gina's lips brush her cheek, delicately, fleeting, like butterfly wings. She pulled away and held Meg's gaze with her own for a beat, before glancing at her lips, then back at her eyes. Meg's emotions must have been plain on her face, because Gina's mouth quirked in another smile, and something shifted between them, setting the air ablaze. Gina turned and walked back to the entrance into the bar. She stopped at the doorway and looked back at her before she disappeared inside. Meg followed, ignoring the admonitions she'd given herself all week. What did they matter now anyway? She set her nearly full bottle down on a nearby table and said a few quick goodbyes to the Diamond Rock crowd, thanking them. She reminded Mark that she had the next day off, and before he could say anything else, she pushed through the crowd out the front entrance. Gina stood just outside, waiting, hands in her front pockets. When she saw her, she smiled.
"Need a ride? You offering or teasing?"
she shot back, pleased to see Gina's eyebrows rise, though she continued to smile. Gina motioned with her head across the parking lot and turned, leading Meg through the rows of trucks and SUVs, some so close together that their side mirrors nearly touched. She had parked in the farthest corner, the Pathfinder's passenger side, a yard from a low cinder block wall that served as a boundary between the River Rest and a large pasture. Highway 130 skirted the far edge of the pasture, and Meg could hear the lone grumble of a big truck headed north, along with the faint strains of country music emanating from the bar. The only light in this stretch of the lot came from the sliver of moon overhead. Gina opened the passenger door.
"It's not a horse," she said softly, "but it'll have to do."
Meg moved close enough to feel Gina's body heat. She reached past her and shut the door, then used her own body to back her against the side of the Pathfinder. She didn't care if this was just a fling for Gina. She didn't care that she lived in Los Angeles, and she didn't care if anyone saw. All that mattered was how it felt to be this close to her, pressed against her in a way that made her heart pound, made chills tear up and down her spine. She cupped Gina's face in her hands and stroked the lines of her cheeks with both thumbs. She heard Gina's breathing speed up as she moved her hands to Meg's hips, so she brought her lips closer to Gina's, barely touching them. Heat and moisture gathered between her thighs, and a growing ache spread across her nerve endings, engulfed her senses. Gina's breath was hot and quick on her mouth before Meg kissed her, a slow, sultry meeting of lips that tasted like tequila and a week's worth of longing. The first turned into a second, then a third, and countless more, as Gina welcomed Meg's tongue into her mouth with a soft groan, and her hands journeyed across Meg's back as she returned her kisses with increasing fervor. Meg worked her arms around Gina and pulled her away from the Pathfinder so she could run her hands over Gina's back. She broke the kiss and dragged her lips along Gina's jawline to one ear, tracing it gently with the tip of her tongue.
"Oh, God," Gina muttered as she buried her fingers in Meg's hair.
She moved her head, and Meg tracked her lips lightly down her neck, the way she smelled bringing her blood to a boil. Gina kissed her again, hard, moving against her like a promise, and Meg matched every motion, forgetting anything that held her to this earth. Her breath came in short bursts as she followed Gina's lead, returned each hungry kiss, allowed what she felt to surface and wash through her like a river. She pulled Gina's shirt from her jeans and slid her hands underneath, her fingertips reveling in the smooth warmth of Gina's skin. Gina's hands tangled in her hair again, and she blazed kisses across her lips. She pushed Meg's hair aside to kiss her neck, and Meg moaned, wondering if she had managed to soak through her jeans.
"Take me somewhere," she said softly against Gina's cheek, struggling to control her pounding heart.
"I'll take you anywhere you want to go," Gina whispered back.
She slowly released her hold, and Meg reluctantly pushed away, but she leaned in again for another quick kiss that turned into several more before she finally stopped and opened the passenger door.
"Where are you staying now?" she asked.
"The Rustic?"
"Then that's where I want to go."
Gina smiled and brushed a lock of hair away from Meg's eyes before she went around to the driver's side. They didn't speak on the short ride to the hotel, but that was okay because their shared silence was charged with expectation and desire, something that was both comfortable and exciting. Gina pulled into the parking lot of the hotel, and she got out and came around to the passenger's side, but she didn't even wait for Meg to get out of her seat before she pulled Meg's face down to hers and kissed her like she hadn't seen her in a while. When she stopped, Meg joined her outside the Pathfinder, and Gina shut the door quietly and kissed her again. And Meg forgot that they might be spotted, that somebody might see, but it didn't matter because Gina held her close and danced slowly with her in the light of the waning moon, the sound of the nearby North Platte, a chorus to "There's Your Trouble," which she sang softly in her ear. And it was heaven swaying with Gina, feeling warmth and desire within her arms, and maybe new beginnings forge in the heat that built between them, just like heaven. She finally released her with an effort and let her hands slide down Gina's arms until she was holding both of her hands.
"Let's go in."
"Are you sure?"
Meg kissed her, and she groaned softly against her mouth.
"I'll take that as a yes," she whispered.
"Smart girl."
She smiled because Gina made her feel deliciously reckless, made her feel like she wanted to cram the past week into a night and hold on tight to whatever time she could get with her.
And if this was the one night she'd get, then she wanted it now, and she wanted it to be memorable.
"Which room?"
"Upstairs."
She led her up the wooden steps, and Meg was glad she'd picked the Rustic, because all the rooms exited to the outside. Even better, she'd gotten the balcony room on the end. Gina had the key ready, and she unlocked the door and pushed it open. She'd left one of the bedside lamps on, near the bed by the window. Her duffel bags were on the bed closest to the door. Meg paused on the threshold.
What about you?
She asked as she brushed a kiss across Gina's lips.
Are you sure?
She smiled, a secret unveiled.
Since I first saw you.
And she pulled her into the room and closed and locked the door. The curtain whispered and fluttered in night breezes just out of reach of the bedside lamp, and a car door slammed from the parking lot as Gina kissed her again. They ended up at the bed closest to the window, where the river's murmur just reached. Meg started to unbutton Gina's shirt from the bottom as Gina's tongue met hers, caressing, tentative. She unbuttoned her own shirt while Gina kissed her. Gina helped her out of it, then shrugged out of her own shirt as Meg buried her fingers in Gina's thick hair and kissed her harder. Gina's fingers swept across her back and down to the waistband of her jeans, then up again to pause at her bra, where they hesitated. She pulled Gina closer and tracked down her neck with her tongue. Gina unhooked Meg's bra, and her warm, strong hands moved to her shoulders to push the straps off, her breathing matching the pounding of Meg's heart, as she, in turn, undid Gina's bra and let it slip to the floor with her own. She pressed herself against her, and the sensation sent a surge of heat down her thighs and pushed a moan from her throat, which Gina caught on her tongue and returned. Her hands rested at Meg's hips, then abdomen, where they stopped. "Yes," Meg said against her lips, and Gina cupped Meg's breasts and gently stroked her nipples with her thumbs, making them throb in time with the ache at her core. She worked her own hands to the waistband of Gina's jeans and caressed her skin just above it with her fingertips, which hesitated near the button. She ended the kiss and stared into Gina's eyes, wondering if that was too forward. Gina smiled and placed her hand over Meg's and guided it to the button. Then she kissed her again as Meg undid her jeans and ran her fingertips along the top of her underwear, hoping that this wasn't a dream and that she really was here, that Gina really was gently pulling at her jeans too. She felt the button release and Gina's warm breath against her face. Chills shot down her back, affirmation that no, this wasn't just a dream.
"Not to ruin the moment," Gina said, "but it's gonna be mighty hard to get you out of these with your boots on."
Her lips brushed Meg's ear, sending sparks down her thighs.
"What do you say, cowgirl? Can I talk you out of your boots?"
"Maybe."
She slid her arms around Gina's neck.
"But you know how cowgirls are about their boots."
A half smile pulled at Gina's mouth, and she started singing softly, her voice a husky, melodious growl.
"Baby, take off your boots."
She slowly undid Meg's zipper, still singing softly.
"You sure won't need them for what I want to do to you,"
she improvised. She stopped.
"Is it working?"
"You have no idea," she said, as she moved out of Gina's reach and sat on the edge of the bed near the window, where she quickly unlaced her ropers.
She removed them and left them on the floor at the foot of the bed. Her socks quickly followed, and she stood again, and her jeans sagged around her hips.
"Don't move," Gina said.
She stepped closer and touched the side of Meg's face, then traced a line from her cheek to her ear. Meg closed her eyes and leaned into her touch as Gina slid her free arm around her waist and pulled her close. She kissed Meg's shoulder, then nuzzled her neck, and goosebumps erupted all over Meg's skin as a delicious chill rippled through her stomach. And then her hands were all over Meg's back again, her lips on her other shoulder, her throat, the space just beneath her ear. Oh, God, that made her burn. Made her run her hands down Gina's smooth, solid back, then up again around to her chest, where she stroked patterns across her breasts and nipples.
"Mmm,"
came Gina's reaction against her neck,
and her hands dropped to Meg's hips, and she slowly started to push her jeans lower.
Uh-uh,
Meg said against her lips. She pulled away and stepped out of her jeans, gratified to hear Gina's breath catch in her throat. She tossed them aside, near the pile of shirts and bras they had already made, then pulled the covers back and slid into bed, watching Gina in the light from the lamp.
Your turn, she said. Show me what you got, city slicker.
She grinned at the expression on Gina's face.
Spoken like a true cowgirl,
she said with an answering grin, before she started to sing, as she balanced first on one foot to pull a boot and sock off, then on the other to repeat.
There's some things I want to say,
she sang, as she let her boots lie where she dropped them, amidst the other articles of clothing. She slowly unzipped her jeans, and Meg's mouth went dry.
And some things I want to do, she continued to sing. So just lie back, baby, because I want a piece of you.
Meg stared as Gina slowly worked her jeans down her thighs. How was it possible that any one person could be so damn sexy?
Just lie back, baby, Gina sang as her jeans dropped lower. I got some things I want to do.
She stepped out of her jeans and approached the bed.
Can I get a piece of you?
Her voice faded into a delicious sigh, and Meg moved over, holding the covers up so Gina could join her. And when she did, she pushed Meg back against the pillows, and Meg pulled her close and kissed her, gently at first, then harder as Gina moved against her, and it felt like nothing she'd ever known to hold Gina like this, to feel her damp warmth against her own, even through their underwear. Like nothing she'd ever known when Gina's tongue traced her neck and collarbone and her lips closed around Meg's nipple, sucking until it throbbed all the way to her clit. And she gasped against Gina's hair, dug her fingers into Gina's back, and lost herself completely in the feel of Gina's mouth and hands, and she couldn't tell where she ended and Gina began. Somehow Meg ended up on top, thrusting slowly against Gina, who groaned and pulled her head down to kiss her and suck her tongue into her mouth. Another surge of moisture settled between Meg's thighs as Gina released her, breathing hard.
You're so beautiful,
Gina said softly against her neck, one hand on her lower back, holding her as they moved together. She stopped and worked her fingers under the waistband of Meg's panties, trying to push them off. Meg helped, and Gina worked hers off as well, and pulled Meg against her again, and nothing Meg had imagined all week about Gina prepared her for how that felt, for the wave of heat and current that engulfed her core. She pulled away slightly so she could watch Gina's face and let herself ride what she saw in her eyes.
You make me crazy, she admitted. You've made me crazy since I first saw you.
Gina smiled.
In a good way, I hope.
Too good.
It's mutual.
She brushed Meg's lips with her fingers.
I found out for sure who you were when I got my tire fixed.
And?
And I knew it was going to be a much more interesting week than I'd originally thought.
She saw heat in Gina's eyes and bent to kiss her before answering.
So you were planning on a boring weekend at a Wyoming ranch? She teased. There's nothing remotely boring about the ranch, she said with mock indignation. I just hadn't planned on you.
I thought maybe you worked for the Forest Service or something, and you were based here for the summer.
I'm flattered. People like rangers better than reporters.
Oh, I don't know. You seem okay for a reporter. She slowly moved her hips, and Gina exhaled with pleasure.
Thanks, she managed. But I know a couple of rangers. I could probably borrow a uniform if you're into that.
A devilish gleam lit her eyes.
Don't need it.
I like you just like this.
She ran her fingers down Gina's chest and caught her breath as Gina arched into her touch. She adjusted her position and slid her fingers between their bodies, down Gina's belly and lower, until she felt slick heat against her fingertips, and she cupped Gina in her palm, her heart pounding like she'd been running for miles. Gina groaned, low and soft. "Please," she whispered, and she gripped Meg's shoulders and pushed against her hand. Meg slid her middle finger in, and her breath hitched at how wet Gina was, and a new ache started between her legs as Gina closed over her finger and moved against her. She bucked, and Meg stopped moving her hand, holding Gina on the edge of climax. Not yet. Not when she'd been aching for her all week. She carefully and gently pulled out, and Gina sighed and ran her hands down Meg's back as Meg shifted and kissed Gina's breasts, teased her nipples with her tongue, worked her mouth down Gina's stomach to the dark triangular patch between her legs. She tasted of musk, sweat, and need as she eased her tongue in, tasted her own desire and every thought she'd had since the first time she fell into Gina's eyes. "Meg," Gina whispered, as she wrapped her fingers in her hair and moved against her mouth like she was trying to draw her in further. She stroked Gina with her tongue, felt Gina's clit harden and throb against her lips, and she ached at how Gina tasted and smelled, at how she responded to her touch. She repositioned herself and slid her middle finger in. She thrust with her hand, gently stroking Gina's clit with her thumb, taking her time, feeling like she might detonate as every muscle in Gina's thighs tightened and her breath came in sharp, short gasps until it stopped momentarily, and Meg used the tip of her tongue to coax Gina over whatever precipice she had reached. Gina stiffened and arched again, one hand in Meg's hair, the other gripping the sheets, and she released against Meg's mouth with a long, guttural groan, Meg's name on her lips as she settled back onto the bed. Gina pulled her close and held on, and Meg sank into the warmth of her arms and the charged vulnerability between them for a few minutes before she gently pulled out and listened to Gina's breathing return to normal, the breeze from the window cool on her sweat-slicked skin. But the heat deep within was another story, and she wondered if one night would be enough, could ever be enough. "You give me a reason," Gina sang softly as she stroked Meg's back. "A reason to breathe." She rolled over, bringing Meg with her. Now on top, Gina kissed her hard and deep, and drew circles around her nipples with one of her fingertips. She stopped and watched Meg's face. "So just lie back," she crooned, "and give me a reason to breathe." Gina's fingers dropped lightly down Meg's abdomen to the top of her thigh, and she watched Meg's eyes, a question in her own. She nodded and took Gina's wrist and guided her hand, heart hammering her chest. Gina slid her finger into her heat, and her heart nearly pounded out of her chest. She held Gina's wrist as Gina plunged one finger slowly in and out, her thumb gently massaging Meg's clit. Her breathing matched Gina's rhythm, and she cupped the back of Gina's neck with her free hand, her hips meeting her strokes. She was close, so close, but Gina must have sensed it because she stopped, and suddenly her tongue replaced her finger, and Meg released her wrist and clenched her jaw, her breath hissing between her teeth as she thrust against her mouth. Every one of her senses peaked, and all she knew were Gina's lips and Gina's tongue, and then Gina slid her middle finger in hard and deep, and she intertwined the fingers of her free right hand with Meg's left. She paused and thrust again, deep, and Meg ignited within and bit back a yell as she held Gina's gaze, watching something gather in her eyes. "Gina," she said with a groan, urgent. "I'm here," she said softly. "Right here." And then everything stopped, and the only thing Meg heard was a roaring in her ears, and all she could feel was Gina locked deep within her. She cupped Gina's face with her free hand and stared into her eyes as she came, wanting Gina to see, wanting her to know how she made her feel. And the tide raced through her, exploded between her legs, and slammed her back against the bed, panting. Gina wrapped herself around her, waiting for a long time before she pulled out, and Meg had never felt so safe as she snuggled into Gina's embrace. No, this night was not going to be enough.
"So you want to stay over?" Gina asked, teasing.
"There's nowhere I'd rather be." She nuzzled her neck. "I'm so glad you had a flat tire."
"Why is that?" she asked with a sigh of pleasure.
"Because I met you before I knew you were the reporter from L.A. Gina laughed.
"What difference does that make?"
"Context," she said as she kissed her shoulder. "I was ready to deal with a city slicker reporter, not with you." She stopped her ministrations and instead watched Gina's face.
"So you're saying that if you hadn't met me until I showed up at the ranch Friday, that things might have been different?"
She pretended to pout, but the sparkle in her eyes told a different story. "I'm just saying that..." Meg paused. What exactly was she saying? "Thinking you were someone else let me think certain things," she finished, not sure she'd made any sense.
"What kinds of things?"
She gave her a sultry little grin. "Like maybe I could go to the ranger's office and find out who you were, and maybe see if I could contact you." Meg answered with a grin of her own.
"I see. So, thinking I wasn't the annoying reporter took some restrictions off your context."
"Exactly."
"Then I'm glad I had a flat tire, too, and that you stopped to help."
"Not that you needed it." Meg kissed Gina's chin.
"Maybe not, but I definitely needed you, though I didn't know it at the time."
So maybe this was more than one night? Butterflies zipped through Meg's stomach, and she hugged Gina closer.
"I think I might like you," she murmured against her lips.
"I think I might like you back."
And Meg smiled, her head on Gina's shoulder, as Gina stroked her hair and softly sang another Dixie Chicks tune about needing wide open spaces, new faces, and the lessons life would give you. 8. Morning coaxed Meg awake. She opened her eyes and heard the river through the window and laughter from the parking lot. She was lying on her side, facing the window, Gina spooning her, arm wrapped around her waist. Gina stirred and pulled her closer, and Meg felt her lips on her neck.
"Best morning ever," Gina said against her skin.
"Yeah, it is." She covered Gina's hand with her own and snuggled against her, reveling in last night's aftermath.
"I have a confession,"
Gina said after a while.
"Oh?"
She rolled over to face her and got caught in her eyes.
"The morning looks really, really good on you," she said after a few moments. "This one in particular?"
"That's all I've got to go on, so yeah." She brushed a kiss across her lips.
"It looks delicious on you," Gina said. "And I'm betting mornings always look this good on you."
"Maybe you'll find out," she said, then caught herself. That was sort of forward, and she didn't want to drop any complications into what had started as a really great day.
"What's the confession?" she asked to change the subject. "I knew the River Rest does karaoke on Fridays."
She propped her head on an elbow, puzzled.
"So?" "So I made sure to check out at the ranch and get my story sent in before I went."
She stroked Meg's cheek and gently brushed her hair out of her face.
because I know the policy about guests at the ranch, and I had to make sure I was done with the story before I went last night. Meg waited, Gina's touch heating her skin in some places and causing chills in others. Because I wanted to make sure nothing would be in the way when I got there.
Are you saying that you were planning to ask me out?
Yes.
Or ask me to bed?
She smiled.
Both. Not necessarily in that order, obviously.
Meg laughed.
And you planned on singing?
She nodded. Not that I thought it would work or anything like that. I just wanted to. Meg kissed her again, long and slow, and Gina responded, her hand moving to Meg's hip, then to her back. All you had to do was ask, she said after a few minutes of enjoying Gina's mouth.
So you said. After the fact, I might add.
She shrugged.
You don't seem to have a problem with it.
No, none at all.
So, how about it? Would you go out with me?
Meg laughed again.
Definitely, even though you do seem to do things backwards sometimes.
Does that mean we can have more mornings like this? She didn't respond right away, and instead studied Gina's eyes, debating the pros and cons of what this represented. Long distance? Hotshot LA reporter? Where could this possibly go? I know this is sudden, and maybe kind of weird. Gina's fingers continued to stroke Meg's face. But I know what I'm feeling. I know what I felt the first time I saw you, and I want to know what happens next. Her fingers stopped moving, but remained on Meg's face. It's okay if you don't want to.
Yes.
She waited.
More mornings, Meg said. And I want to know what happens, too. Even though you're not actually a forest ranger.
Oh, fine. Hold that against me, she said with a little pout that didn't withstand another of her smiles.
I'll hold something against you, like this.
She slid her hand down Gina's chest, then lower and lower still.
That's okay, she said with a little gasp. I can take it.
I know. Gina started to move slowly against Meg's fingers. She suddenly stopped, and her eyes widened.
Oh, shit, do you have to be back at the ranch?
Nope, day off. She smiled and continued to tease Gina with her fingertips.
Then this is definitely the best morning ever.
And she kissed her, and the slow burn Meg had been carrying for Gina since the day in the parking lot of the feed store erupted again into flames. No, she didn't know for sure where this would go, but she knew what she was feeling, too, and she wanted more, much, much more. And then she surrendered to Gina's lips and hands. Meg read the story again. Gina had a smooth, breezy style, tempered with a little grit and grin, as Alice had said. She could hear Gina's voice in the words, see her smiling as she talked, and the longing that filled her chest was an almost physical pain. She flipped the manila envelope over so she could look at Gina's handwriting again. Neat block letters, but Meg saw in them parts of the woman who'd put them on the envelope. She'd sent several copies of the piece, a feature in the Times magazine. Meg envisioned how Gina had convinced her editor to run it as a feature. Gina said she'd gone for it right away, and she probably had. Gina was hard to refuse. She smiled. Very hard to refuse. She flipped the pages. She'd taken some really great photos, including one of Meg in the corral with the filly she'd worked with. There was another of Jackson at the bonfire, and one of all the dogs staring into the stable. She'd have to ask how she'd managed to get that one, plus some landscape shots and another of the main buildings as you crested the hill before you drove down to the parking area. And so far, Gina's article had worked. Practically the day after it was published, they started getting calls. Now they were booked solid through August, and a few people had asked to be put on a waiting list for next spring. She'd told her dad it was time for a decent website, as slow as service was out here, so they could get quotes from the story posted along with the link to it. Every little bit helps, she'd said. Maybe they'd finally be able to get ahead. She looked up from the table in the dining room where she sat with the article and stared out the front door, open to the late June air. She hadn't seen Gina since she'd left, a week after their first night together. She'd stuck around in Saratoga as long as she could, even coming to the ranch when Meg had downtime. Extended vacation, she'd told Stan, who seemed to really like her, so he didn't mind as long as work got done. It's a wonderful article. Meg looked up at Alice. Yeah, good pictures too. I told you it would be. She sat down on the bench next to her. When will you see her again? She laughed, a little embarrassed. The extra week tipped me off, she said as she squeezed Meg's shoulder. Maybe around the 4th. She said she'd let me know as soon as she got the time off. And maybe another story in this neck of the woods. Alice chuckled. Maybe. You should tell your dad. She looked over at her, stomach clenching a little. I know. Alice must have read her discomfort because she put her arm around her shoulder. He really likes her. As long as she's not who I'm seeing. You don't know that. She shrugged. This is your life, Meg. You get to date who you want to. Doesn't mean people will like it. And that's going to be something you'll be dealing with for a long time. I wish it wasn't the case, sweetie. I wish the world could be different. But you have to live your truth. That's the kind of woman you are, and the kind of woman your dad knows you are. She sighed. How come the whole world can't be like you? Alice gave her a kiss on the cheek. She stood and patted Meg's hair. The phone rang in the kitchen and she went to answer it. Meg put the article back into the envelope. She was keeping this one as her personal copy. She stood and was almost to the door when Alice called to her from the kitchen. Phone, Meg. She handed the receiver to her, smiling. Gina. Meg flushed, embarrassed again. Alice smiled. She's a lovely woman, and I think she gets you. She went back into the kitchen and Meg sat down again, grinning as she held the phone to her ear.
Mail call,
Stan said to Meg as she came into the office. Aaron, Davy's replacement, moved aside for her. She liked his quiet, pleasant demeanor and lopsided smile. He'd picked up the rhythms of the ranch within a couple of days after Stan hired him 2 weeks ago.
Let me know if I need to shift my schedule, Aaron said to Stan.
Hi, Meg.
He tipped his hat at her as he left, in the way that old-timey cowboys might do, though he was barely 30. She gave him a little wave and turned back to Stan. He handed her a manila envelope, and she recognized Gina's handwriting. Little electrical charges zipped around her stomach. Gina had said to expect something in the next couple of days.
You think she and her family would like a Wyoming care package?
He asked, without looking up from the paperwork at his desk.
Like what?
He took his reading glasses off and regarded her.
Some of Alice's cookies, jerky, a jar of honey and jam. She said her grandmother and mom cook quite a bit. They might appreciate that.
I guess so, she said, wondering when Gina had told him that.
Next time you talk to her, get her address and her folks.
He gave her a wink.
Unless you've already got him, in which case, just check with her. Make sure to be okay.
Meg nodded. I will.
She's good people. Stands to reason her family had a hand in that.
He leaned back in his chair.
After all, I'm a decent guy, and you turned out okay. Near as I can tell, anyway.
Amusement shined in his eyes.
Oh, yeah, it's all you, Dad.
She gave him a look.
Okay, okay, I'll only take half the credit.
He picked his glasses up and gestured at the envelope in her hand with them.
Better read that before it burns a hole through your fingers.
Her eyes widened, and he gave her a little smile.
Like I said, she's good people.
Fortunately, the phone rang, and he gave her a wave as he answered. Meg slipped outside, wondering if he had guessed what was going on between her and Gina. Sure sounded like he suspected something. She walked toward her truck, parked outside the lodge. She'd left her tailgate down, and she sat on it, swinging her booted feet as she opened the envelope and pulled the sheets of paper out. She read the top sheet, a handwritten note in Gina's no-nonsense printing.
Hiya, cowgirl. God, I miss you. I think I'm going insane. I got spoiled those 2 weeks at the DR, especially the second one. At least I have the phone and email, though I know you're so damn busy you don't get to check it much. I think about you constantly, and I'm plotting all kinds of ways to see you again. I'll tell you all about him when I talk to you next, which will probably be tonight since I can't go a day without hearing your voice. I thought I might hitch a ride on the next cattle drive, but the Goodnight Trail closed a long time ago, and hell, it doesn't really go near California. So I guess I'll just have to use good old-fashioned planes and cars.
Meg smiled. She sniffed the paper and thought maybe she smelled cinnamon. She continued reading.
We've gotten lots of great feedback about the article. Editors loved it. We've even gotten some calls. Hopefully those people will be calling you to make reservations. Let me know if you or your dad want more copies, because I have a few lying around here. Anyway, I thought I'd send you the version I like best, though it won't ever make the paper. Hope you like it too. Miss ya. Yours, Gina.
I miss you too, Meg said softly as she put the note aside and started reading the next page, which was typed.
I know a little bit about farming, and maybe something about ranching. My grandfather, Antonio, raises cattle and wheat outside Sacramento. I'm a city slicker now, but I miss the land, and I miss the shadows a cowboy hat casts when you're sitting in a saddle, boots in your stirrups, headed for home after a long day. I still find peace in the open expanses of space that define the American West. Peace and possibility. So I went to Wyoming in May, by accident. I had to fill in at the last minute for another journalist. I had 5 days to pack and drive there. Funny how that worked out. I'd only been to Wyoming a few times in the past. Quick trips to Yellowstone and Jackson Hole, twice through Laramie and Cheyenne. I'm not an expert on the area, but that's where I had to go to get a story on the ways some Western ranching families survive the market fluctuations and ever-constricting hold of agribusiness. I don't know why my editor picked the Diamond Rock Ranch south of Saratoga. Maybe she liked the way it sounded. Western with an edge of glamour. Kind of Hollywood. And my editor is completely L.A. Saratoga barely supports 1,700 people. It's about 30 miles north of the Colorado border, as much a product of prairie as mountain, nestled between the Rockies and the Medicine Bows. But there's magic in the air. As soon as I hit town limits, I felt peace, even when I blew a tire as I slowed down on State Highway 130. I managed to get my vehicle into the parking lot outside Saratoga Feed. As I started working on my tire, I found possibility.
Meg stopped reading and let thoughts of Gina course through her veins for a moment. She inhaled deeply,
reveling in memories, and read further. I like stories about instant connections at first meeting, when you just know this person is somehow important, will somehow play a role in your life. But I don't put much stock in them. So I started changing my tire and, well, it happened. I have one of those stories now. I fell for her boots first, because that's what I saw first. Or rather, I fell for the way she filled them, and her jeans, and then her t-shirt, and the way her hat sat on her dark hair and shaded her eyes, gray, like the storm clouds that gather over the Rockies. The first word she ever said to me was, "Hey," a simple greeting, a thoughtful, "Can I give you a hand?" inflection, something just about anybody in Saratoga would do for a stranger with a flat. But I wasn't a stranger, and I somehow knew that, and she knew it too, because I saw it in her eyes. I wondered if she saw it in mine. I hoped she did, as I watched her pull my spare tire out of the back of my Pathfinder. She gave me her time and told me where to get the bum tire fixed, and then we had to go about the business of living on the different paths our lives were building. But something was at work there. Something bigger than both of us, bigger than a windswept Wyoming landscape and a western sky painted with a million stars. Meg's chest tightened as she kept reading. It was the story of their first week, of Gina's growing feelings for her and the certainty she felt about their connection. She got to the second to the last page. "I don't know why some things happen. They just do. And now Wyoming's in my blood, and it's in my bones, and it's wrapped around my heart. And it tells me stories about dogs named Dammit, and winters so hard they cut. It sings cowboy songs around an evening bonfire, and two-steps me across a wooden floor, worn smooth under hundreds of boots. It takes me riding over secret mountain passes, and kisses me in stands of ponderosa pine that smell faintly of vanilla. It makes me cry with hope before it leaves my bed with the dawn, and it holds me close in the dark and whispers dreams against my lips. I need Wyoming. I need it like I need the breath in my body. I found my magic in Saratoga when the first word she ever said to me was, 'Hey,' and I fell in love with her from the boots up." Meg's eyes stung a little with tears. She wiped her eyes and turned to the last page. A flight itinerary, LAX to Denver. She read the writing at the top of the page. "See you in a week, cowgirl." A thousand tiny explosions rippled through her chest. She slid the papers back into the envelope and watched Dammit chase Bug off into the horse paddock. The sun was warm on her back, and Alice's laughter carried past the open dining room door. Peace settled across Meg's heart. Peace and possibility. She swung her legs one last time and hopped onto the ground. Whatever this was with Gina, Meg wanted it and needed it, and it didn't matter what anyone else thought. She smiled, tapping the envelope against her thigh as she walked. She opened the office door. "Dad, you got a minute?" From the Hat Down, written by Andy Marquette and performed by Abby Creighton.
Chapter 1. May 2009. Meg sipped her coffee and stared at the three boxes stacked next to her front door, and guilt tugged her thoughts. They'd been there a couple of months now, reminders of her breakup with Kate. She'd called Kate last week to set up a time to pick them up, and Kate, ever the organized and conscientious type, had asked apologetically if she could collect the boxes later, as she was just starting a new job and trying to get settled in her own place in Fort Collins, barely an hour south. But the distance between them was much more than that, Meg had agreed. The least she could do is give Kate the space to get her stuff when she could. Meg had offered to drive it down a few weeks ago, but Kate wouldn't hear of it, though she said she appreciated that. Meg knew it was genuine. She'd been nice about it. She always was. It made Meg feel guilty for pushing her to pick the stuff up. The boxes maintained their blank silence as she studied them. She had debated moving them into the bedroom she used as an office, but decided to just leave them by the door. Maybe they were penance in some way, reminders of a relationship gone sour, representatives of an ending. She took another sip. Endings sucked. But in a weird way, they were pre-beginnings. You couldn't have a beginning without an end, after all. She shifted her attention to the window and the trees outside, past the covered front porch. Mid-May, and many had finally leafed out, presaging summer. She looked at the boxes again, and a wave of sadness washed through her chest. She swallowed it with a gulp of coffee, just as her BlackBerry rang with a particular tone. She smiled as she pulled it off her belt. "Hey, fellow vet person, what's up?"
"Hi, Dr. Horsechick,"
came Sean's goofy nickname for her. She had a way of stringing words together in unique combinations that somehow ended up making perfect sense.
"Just checking to be sure you remember that I'll be in your fabulous Laramie Tuesday doing a most awesome lecture on holistic approaches to large four-legged domestic animals."
Meg almost snorted coffee through her nose. "Approaching, say, cows holistically? Like with New Age lassos? Do you tie a crystal on the end?"
"No, incense," she retorted with a duh tone.
Meg laughed. "And what kind of incense might make a cow even more catatonic than some of them already are?"
"Sandalwood, maybe jasmine. I haven't tried that one yet, but Julie makes them grow dreads and crave reggae."
"Bob Mooley," Meg said, trying not to giggle.
"Oh, hell no, I can't believe you just said that,"
Sean started laughing.
"No Woman, No Cut is their fave tune."
Meg grinned and set her nearly empty coffee cup on the topmost box. "Are you bringing one of these dreadlocked bovines to your lecture? I'm sure the students would appreciate it."
"Whatever. They're all serious cowboy types up there. Maybe I could get a cow to wear a 10-gallon Stetson. Though you look better in Stetsons than any cow. Than any human types, actually. Well, it is the head covering of choice in this state."
She nudged a box with the toe of her boot.
"So you still want to stop by when you're done? Is there wind in Wyoming? And that's a rhetorical question, by the way,"
Sean said with teasing warmth.
"Wind? Here?"
Meg asked in a what-are-you-talking-about tone.
"Exactly my point." "Cool, just come by the house."
She picked up her cup.
"Will do. I'll call you if anything changes. Oh, speaking of seeing you, your birthday's coming up,"
she said in a sing-song tone. Meg grimaced.
"Don't remind me. I'm trying to be low-key about it." "Please, you're always low-key. Why not have a party, just to shake things up a bit?"
She glanced at the boxes, then back out the window.
"You know, I'm not really the party kind. Besides, I'm going to the ranch that weekend. You and Ted want to come up? I'd be okay with a birthday barbecue."
She walked into the kitchen and rinsed her cup out with one hand and set it in the drying rack.
"I'd love to. But Ted's brother's supposed to be coming through then. Damn. We want to at least take you out for dinner, though."
Sean sighed plaintively.
"Since you won't let me throw a massive street party for you, with a DJ and Chinese acrobats, will a small, painfully intimate dinner with me and Ted suffice?"
"Always," Meg said, smiling. "I'll check my schedule, and we'll talk more when I see you tomorrow."
"Sounds good. Catch you later."
"Yep. Hi to Ted." Meg hung up and slid the phone back into its holder on her belt. She gave the boxes another hard stare, then turned and walked down the hallway toward the two bedrooms at the rear of the house. The one she used as her office